Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Meanwhile, Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, has been speaking over the last half hour or so, unveiling the latest version of the bailout plan, the mere $700 billion part that we all know about. I'm thinking of it as version 5.0. First came the toxic asset bailout. That was changed to the equity injection bailout, which gave way to the credit infusion bailout. Then came the Citigroup toxic asset buyout. Second version, that was yesterday, and today it's something else. So with me now is MIT Professor of Entrepreneurship, Simon Johnson. Professor Johnson, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Hi.
So I'm looking at the headlines of what Secretary Paulson has been announcing, and it says here a new pair of programs that will provide $800 billion to help unfreeze the market for consumer debt. The markets for consumer debt, such as credit cards, auto loans, and student loans, which all essentially came to a halt in October. And some of this does have to do with buying up bad debt. Tell us what you understand.
Well, today's announcement you should break into two parts. There's a $600 billion part and a $200 billion part. And the $600 billion part is what the Fed is going to do with regard to the so-called government-chartered housing finance companies. That's Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the Federal Home Loan Banks. They're going to buy $100 billion of the debt of those guys, and they're going to buy up to $500 billion of mortgage-backed securities issued by them. Now, the way to think about this is that the government owns Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac at this point, as you know, and essentially this is shifting across the government balance sheet. Instead of holding this debt, this obligations in the housing part of the portfolio, it's going into the Fed part of the portfolio. So it doesn't really do very much, particularly doesn't do much for interest rates for people who are not so-called government-sponsored enterprises. The $200 billion part is a bit more interesting. That's this new term asset-backed securities loan facility, and this is going to be lent by the Fed to holders of various securities, some which are AAA, some which are already government guaranteed. So there's also some balance sheet shifting there. Hard to know exactly how much. Of the 200, the Treasury will eat the first $20 billion in losses. So they're giving credit protection to the Fed, and that's coming out of Mr. Paulson's $700 billion TARP program. If this isn't all complex enough for you yet, I'm sure they'll make it more complicated later in the week.
Why do they think that this will work when the previous versions didn't work to unfreeze the credit markets?
I don't know why they think it will work. It seems very unlikely to me. I think they're trying to do something. They're trying all kinds of improvisations, and they have taken on an enormous amount of additional debt. The number you were citing just now, almost $8 trillion from Bloomberg, actually doesn't include the Fannie and Freddie numbers. The amount of debt they took on when they took over those businesses. So we're creeping up close to the value of GDP now. They're trying hard, but I'm afraid this approach they've been adopting, this somewhat incremental approach with particularly with a lot of weekend deals stitched together, like with Citigroup, it's really not working.
What would you do?
Well, I think you would want to come at it in a much bigger, more systematic way. I think you need a big fiscal stimulus, which is what Mr. Obama's team is now talking about. You need to systematically recapitalize the banking system. Doing these bits and pieces doesn't work. You need to put in place a scheme of how to do that. And I actually published one this morning on my website, baselinescenario.com. People can put their comments there and tell us how we've got it wrong. But I think that's the direction we've got to go in. And you also need to have a pretty substantial restructuring of mortgages. You've got to manage the flow of foreclosed properties onto the market. And I'm afraid you've got to have an even more expansionary monetary policy than one we've had. We cannot fall into a deflationary spiral. That would be the real disaster. Here.
What's a more expansive monetary policy? Negative interest rates?
No, you have to put more money into the system. You need to actually finance some of the deficit, some of this increased spending with money issue rather than with debt issue. I know this will shock people to hear, but that's it's not something I would ordinarily propose. For an economy like the United States, it's rather shocking that we've reached this point. But I'm afraid this is the result of the policies that brought us here, and particularly the failed attempts to deal in a piecemeal fashion with the crisis so far. We are really facing, I would say, right now, our most dangerous situation, the most more danger than when this whole thing started.
Well, recall following a comment by our previous guest, Amity Slays. She's concerned that if you just keep printing money to keep being this expansionary, then the dollar is going to be worth less and less because it's not based on anything, and we're just printing and printing money. And then the Chinese and whoever else is buying our bonds, you know, won't flee to the dollar as opposed to some other currency. And then we're really done.
No, then we're in good shape. Amity has it backwards, unfortunately, because the great thing about an expansionary monetary policy, the great thing about inflation and making people worry about the dollar, is that other countries around the world are going to try and keep pace with us. So unlike fiscal policy, where you do a fiscal expansion, and we will do one, other countries have an inclination or an incentive to sit back and say, aha, let's free ride on the U.S. fiscal package. With monetary policy, that doesn't work. You're already seeing the U.K., other countries starting to run a more expansionary monetary policy so that their currencies, the dollar doesn't depreciate relative to their currencies, or they're actually trying to depreciate relative to us and get a bit of a boost from their exports. Now, it's true this can get out of hand. I am certainly not saying this is without risks. It is, absolutely has risks. It's not an attractive alternative. It's just the least bad of the terrible alternatives the bad options that we now face.
Do you think that maybe these two approaches need to go together? Because we're already talking about the $700 billion bailout, which I guess today became an $800 billion bailout. With what authority from Congress to spend that extra $100 billion, I don't know. But Obama now is talking about a stimulus package that could also reach $700 billion or more. So maybe they're trying to bail out the financial institutions or shore up the financial institutions, to use a less judgmental term, at the same time that they're trying to flood the economy with money and put people to work and all of that stuff. Maybe the two go together rather than compete with each other. Is that possible?
Well, the two certainly go together, and they have to be combined with more progress on monetary policy and on housing directly. But you put your finger on an absolutely key point just now. Where is the authority from Congress for this? What they've done today is basically the big money is from the Fed, and the Fed has authority to do this to a limited degree, without having to go for a congressional approval. But I think Congress will and should ask a lot of questions, and they're going to ask a lot more questions about the Citigroup bailout, which was really not a good deal for taxpayers. So the more they try to sort of, put together these complex deals with large headline numbers involving relatively little cash from the Treasury, the more that raises legitimate concerns on Capitol Hill. And that is not going to help us really have the debate we need to put together these big decisive measures, which hopefully will come in January, if not sooner.
Why is Citigroup not a good deal for the taxpayers if it stabilizes the system?
Well, it's not going to stabilize the system. We've, as you said, we're on version 5.0, or maybe it's more than that, of these little steps put together over the weekend. It's not enough. The amount of capital they put in, $20 billion cash put into Citigroup, is not enough. Citigroup has a balance sheet of $2 trillion, including off-balance sheet liabilities that we might be up to close to $2.5 trillion. That the market, people who follow Citi for a living, estimate the loss of Citi to be much, much greater than that. Okay, so it doesn't help Citi. It's not a scalable program. You can't do this for other banks. The terms are completely unreasonable, and it's a very non-transparent deal, which people are already starting to get extremely, extremely concerned about.
Those are your reasons.
Those are some of the key reasons. Yes.
So one other thing before you go, and by the way, we'll talk about the transparency more with our Bloomberg guest next hour. They're actually suing the federal government to get more information on some of this other shoring up of financial institutions that the Fed won't even tell us what institutions and how much money, because they don't want their market position to be eroded. But I think that's how we get into this mess. So just explain this last thing to us, because since they're going back to buying toxic debt assets now, they're going to purchase, according to the AP story I'm reading here, another $500 billion in mortgage-backed securities, those pools of mortgages bundled together and sold to investors. But nobody knows how much they're worth. So how is that going to work?
Well, that is the $500 billion question. And in fact, one of the big worries from the Citi deal is we bought or we got involved in, we the taxpayer, got involved in guaranteeing roughly $300 billion in the problem assets that they hold. We don't know what was the price of those $300 billion. What was the mark on them? If it was the end of the third quarter, which is quite possible, then we took a massive loss. Over the weekend, you and I lost $100 billion, probably, roughly speaking. But yeah, exactly. Bad weekend, huh? But we don't know. We absolutely don't know. And this lack of transparency is a mistake. They think that they are trying to protect us and protect themselves, but they're not. They're going to get themselves into big trouble. There's going to be a backlash. The Citi deal has a lot of downside for the taxpayer and far too little upside. That is just not sustainable politically.
You let Citi go down?
No, of course not. The big mistake, the way we got into this whole mess, was the handling of Lehman and AIG. That was a disaster. Of course you have to save Citi, but I think you can save it. And again, I would refer to the proposal on my website, baselinescenario.com, where you have to take more common equity. So the market cap of Citi fell below $20 billion at the close on Friday. And we the taxpayers put in $20 billion cash, right? So, yeah. You know, roughly speaking, we could have had 50% of the equity. Now, maybe we're not comfortable with that degree of government ownership, but we could have set up a resolution trust-type corporation structure which will manage these equity stakes for us. And when the stock rallies, as it did on Monday, and as it will when people realize the government is coming with decisive support, then we, the taxpayer, make some money on that. The idea is not to have government-run banks. That will be a disaster. But Resolution Trust Corporation can sell the stakes as the market recovers, and we can keep our good private sector, private entrepreneurship-based economy. That's no problem. But the taxpayer needs to get upside when the taxpayer takes this amount of downside risk.
The Dow, by the way, is up right now 79 cents. I don't think I've ever seen that before on my TV monitor, but there it is. It's up 79 cents right now, the Dow. Simon Johnson is the professor of entrepreneurship at the Sloan School of Management at MIT. What's your website again for people who want to know more?
BaselineScenario, all one word, .com.
We will link on our page at WNYC.org. Simon Johnson, we're not going to solve it all today, but thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Now, here's a call-in for you guys. Because there is a silver lining right now. There are a few. Here's one. The travel industry is trying really hard to win you over in this down economy, and you might want to take them up on their offer. Travel prices are down. You can now go on a 5-day cruise in the Bahamas from Miami for just $99 a person, according to one ad we saw. That's $25 a day with free food and entertainment. You can't live at home for that cheap. Even the bargain airlines are offering bargains. You can fly from New York to anywhere in California for $250 now, about half the price of a ticket this summer. So as the hotel industry and other travel-related businesses are hurting, how are you going to capitalize off their desperate deals? Call us with the best travel deal that you have seen or signed up for in the last few weeks, 212-433-WNYC. This is a share-it-with-a-class moment just for about the next 5 minutes. Let's tick through some of the great travel deals that you may have found. $15 a bag, maybe, you know, doesn't dissuade you anymore if you can get on the plane for $50. 212-433-WNYC. Tell everybody about the greatest travel deal that you have found in the last few weeks, whether you're going or not, and help somebody to maybe ease the financial pain by taking a cheap trip. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll take your calls in a minute.